We're talking defensive linemen, and no position in football has more quality talent. We're breaking down the dominant new duos for the Rams and Eagles, debating whether it's better to build through the Jaguars model or the Patriots model, and we'll unveil our ranking of the top 10 defensive linemen in the NFL for 2018. It's all on the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramlin. He is Andy Benoit. Our position ranking shows series rolls on here. We are on defensive linemen. And to be clear, well, you know, we'll do some clarifications as we go on as to who we considered a defensive lineman and who we considered an edge player and who we considered other positions, I guess, should it come up. But Andy, this is a talent-rich area of the defense. I think the most talent-rich area.
It's kind of become our favorite position group almost, hasn't it? Because there are a lot of guys that we can say are underrated, and it makes us feel smart to say, hey, nobody appreciates this guy, but we do. Anyone but a defensive end in a 4-3, a true 4-3 scheme, is pretty much in play here. Isn't that how we would probably describe who we're talking about? D tackles and then interior defensive ends?
Yeah, and you know, historically, going all the way back to 2015, since we started doing these shows. No, sorry, 2016. We didn't do these in 2015. Michael Bennett has always been on this show as opposed to edge. Some people call him an edge rusher. We correctly group him in with these defensive linemen here. The one change this year, which I think we both forgot when we were doing our rankings, and we will have the unveiling of the top 10 defensive linemen in football later in the show, but we both had Jadeveon Clowney in there originally, forgetting that we already had Jadeveon Clowney on the edge rusher show. He only gets to be in one list. He's good, but he's not that good to break our rules. So he will not be in this year's show.
I think we both think he is a better interior defensive lineman, but he didn't play there a whole lot last year with the Whitney Mercilus injury. So he was an edge guy this year. Clowney, his future to me is as a three technique, as a one gap penetrating three technique, although he can do a lot more things than just that.
Yeah, no, certainly. And we'll probably have him back on the show. The 2019 show, once the Texans get everyone healthy and they can play guys where they want to play them. But let's get into it. Let's talk some big topics here before we get into the unveiling the top 10 rankings. First one, you know, let's start with the Jaguars. I thought they were really interesting as far as the way they built their defense last year. They struggled early in the year stopping the run, and you know they had good and bad days down the stretch. They were obviously better after the Marcell Dareus trade, answering the Bills' prayers by taking Dareus off their hands. But this Jaguars team is built with small, fast linebackers. They didn't really go super big up front. Would it have made more sense? And I realize it's a little bit absurd to criticize the Jaguars roster building considering what this defense was, but would it have made sense for them to go sort of big up front and then you have your fast linebackers behind that and you play it that way? Or did they kind of do it a smarter way for the modern game where they just said, you know, we're just going to get speed everywhere. We're going to worry about the pass. We'll figure out the run later, which they did.
Yeah, it's closer to that second example you give, because their scheme, we're going to touch on the Jim Schwartz scheme probably a lot in this show by the nature of it, and especially with Philadelphia having won the Super Bowl on the strength of their defensive linemen. But that's the ultimate one-gap penetrating scheme. Now, Jacksonville is not quite in the Jim Schwartz 4-3 scheme. There may be a step below in terms of conservativeness up front. So they'll be inclined to two-gap a little bit with their nose tackle, or really it's a nose shade, which means you line up over the center's shoulder rather than directly over his head. They might have some two-gap-ish type of concepts there, but big picture, they're still a gap-oriented penetrating team. And so with that in mind, you want quicker, destructive defensive linemen. Yes, your linebackers are a little small, but the logic behind it is if we break down the blocking structure, it doesn't matter anyway. When you have small linebackers, the goal is to keep blockers from getting their body on them. And you can do that with big clogging defensive linemen like the Patriots do, like the Detroit Lions have done. Or you can try to do it with linemen that break down the blocking structure and force blockers to have to go other than where the play design takes them. So it's just a matter of philosophy. They did get better when they got Darius, though. There's no question about it. And he filled a lot of those one technique, those nose shade responsibilities for them.
I mean, it seems like this is the trend league-wide. We'll talk about the Patriots in a moment and the way they have approached this. But, I mean, you can see every, I'm a draft dork, so I will say every year we kind of see these. Vita Vea this year, I guess, was kind of the exception. But in past years, you've seen these guys, these 320, 330-pound nose tackles who come out and test fairly well. And they always drop. And it's always, the knock on some of these guys is, well, these are early down guys. These are guys who are occupying blockers. They're run down only guys. Everyone wants the guys who get upfield now.
It's because you can play those guys on more snaps than the run clogging guys. And what's interesting, mm-hmm. I think about 4 years ago, Gary, the guys like Vita Vea were strictly base personnel players. And so they were only on the field if the offense had a fullback or a second tight end in the game. Well, as we know, teams don't really do that much anymore. It's three wide receiver sets on about two-thirds of the snaps. Mm-hmm. But what defenses have started doing is playing their base front seven personnel or base front seven at least alignments against those three receiver sets on first and second down, because they don't want to have to happen to them what's been happening to the Kansas City Chiefs, which is teams line up in three receiver sets, but then they ran the ball down your throat just handing it off anyway. So teams are trying to find a happy medium. Denver did it very well last year. They had the number one run defense in terms of yards per carry allowed, and they did it with Domantas Peko. He played in a lot of their nickel packages, mm-hmm. but he's not a nickel player at all. He's what you're hoping Vita Vea becomes. So teams are getting better at mixing and matching the way they play their front seven. And everybody rotates now, too. That's the other part. We'll touch on a few of these guys. Sue and Donald are two of the guys that rarely come off the field. Now they're playing together. But a lot of the defensive linemen, say Calais Campbell's another one who doesn't come off the field much. Almost everyone else, though, is part of a rotation, especially interior defensive linemen.
Well, let's get to a couple of the top tandems here. We're going to set up a couple of audio clips. This first one is coming from a podcast we like. This is Birds with Friends, an Eagles podcast. This is from The Athletic, and then we're talking some Michael Bennett joining Fletcher Cox in Philly.
When I heard of this trade, the first thing that I thought of was Michael Bennett and Fletcher Cox rushing from the inside on third downs or obvious passing situations. I mean, I don't think there's going to be a better tandem of interior pass rushers in the entire NFL.
All right, so the first thing I wanted to ask you, Andy, is I don't want to say you're down on Michael Bennett, but you're a little bit down on Michael Bennett. We have been very high on Michael Bennett over the years. I think he's a guy who, when we have done this show the last 2 years, he's been in the top five, maybe even top three in our defensive lineman rankings. We will unveil a little bit later. He did not make the top 10 this year, but Bennett has slid back a little bit, which is as to be expected at this stage of his career. But what are the Eagles getting as far as you're concerned?
I think they're getting a cheaper Vinnie Curry, which at this stage of both men's careers, Curry, I believe, is 28 or 29, somewhere right there. Bennett's mm-hmm. in his early 30s. To me, that's a small downgrade within the context of Philadelphia's scheme for what they ask Curry to do, now what they'll ask Bennett to do. It'll be interesting. I'm not saying I disagree with the point we just heard either. Bennett and Fletcher Cox as a tandem, that is a destructive tandem. Brandon Graham played more defensive tackle in obvious passing situations last year for the Eagles, and it went exceptionally well. So part of me wonders if Bennett is here. Yes, he's made his career as a three technique on passing downs. That's where he's been most disruptive. But Graham was so much more effective last season in that role on passing downs. Part of me wonders if Bennett's not here to play defensive end full time. And I'm sure he'll do some of both, but will he be more of a defensive end than we've usually seen in the past? That'll be interesting to sort out. And I think it's going to be a function of where they feel Brandon Graham should be playing, because Graham's a top priority there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I'd play Graham inside. I think my sort of A line there would be Cox and Graham on the inside, and Bennett maybe, you know, he's not on the field on a lot of these passing downs this year. Well, you know, we'll see, but.
Well, and they also have Tim Jernigan to keep in mind, who's not healthy right now. He might not be ready till Halloween or so. But let's say he is healthy for the sake of the discussion. He's a phenomenal first and second down player, and I think he'd be effective on third downs and if he weren't surrounded by so many other good players in this Eagles D-line. And then Derek Barnett last year, their first-round pick, who developed gradually. This is the best defensive line. We haven't even said hello to Nada either. I mean, this defensive line is overflowing with talent, and somebody's going to get less playing time than they typically would.
Yeah, incredibly deep there. Well, let's talk about the other big move here. We're going to set this one up with an audio clip from this is from the Locked On Rams podcast, and well, you can probably guess who it's about.
What do you think the Rams are truly getting with Ndamukong Suh, and how do you think he'll fit in on that D line?
He hasn't fallen off at one single bit. He has been as dominant as he ever was with the Lions. Like you said, the double teams, he can eat those up and still win against double teams. He is super strong. I don't know how many tackles he had this year where he basically one-armed the guy and brought him down to the ground. So he's still a freak. You guys are getting an all-pro.
All right. So, well, we'll touch on this first, Andy. Sue, is he as dominant as he has ever been?
Boy, would you put it in those words, as dominant as he's ever been? My inclination is to disagree. Now, here's how I'm going to wiggle out of this. If you say he's just as dominant as ever, and I don't have to think about the specifics when you say ever been, I probably would agree. Yeah, I mean, and that's just a compliment to him. I don't think he slowed down. So I agree at the premise of the question. Some of the stuff he did in Detroit early in his career is stuff what we maybe won't see again from him, because it's just so unachievable for 99.5% of human bodies. But I like the combination of Sue and Donald. To me, though, Gary, this was more of a run-defending tactic than a pass-rush-boosting tactic for the Rams. Let's remember, and we'll talk about this when we get more to Aaron Donald and him winning Defensive Player of the Year. This Rams defense ranked 30th in yards allowed per rush attempt, which basically they were the third worst run defense in the NFL last season. And Ndamukong Suh will change that. He's a double-team gobbler. He still can penetrate. It's interesting because he plays in a light, narrow stance, and he plays in an up-the-field penetration scheme. That's what he did in Miami. He'll still do that under Wade Phillips, but they're going to play him more inside as a one technique where he'll have to take on and sustain blocks against double teams. He's always done that exceptionally well, even though it really doesn't fit his skill set directly or certainly his body type. So I'll be interested to see how he does with those chores on a more regular down-to-down basis. His numbers might not look great, but his effectiveness has never been reflected in the numbers. He is a very selfless player. He does the dirty work, not the dirty plays. Some think he does those too, but he does the dirty work as well as anyone in the NFL.
Which is kind of funny. He had this reputation, especially a couple years ago when the Dolphins started really slow. People kind of said, "Oh, Sue, you know, he's freelancing. He's being selfish out there. He's doing his own thing rather than playing within the scheme." You never really bought into that, did you?
Not really, but the people who were saying that had more knowledge than I. I mean, that was the reports. That was coming from within inside the Miami organization. Mm-hmm. For all we know, that's just one disgruntled position coach, which is that doesn't mean what he's saying isn't valid. The guy I've heard that about, that I've heard some other position coaches, none on his current staff, but coaches who've had him before, say that same thing as Aaron Donald, though. And, you know, he freelances. He goes underneath blocks instead of over blocks.
Yeah.
You can – listen – You can get away with playing that way if you're a certain level of talent. But what's important, and what I think is going to be the other tricky part for the Rams, is you need linebackers behind you who will make you right. Those guys have to make up for it. So Ryan, if you were to put theoretically Ryan Shazier when he's healthy, because he's the epitome of a reckless, abandoned type of linebacker, if you take Ryan Shazier behind Ndamukong Suh, you're going to get some big plays, but you'll also get a number 30 run defense again, because both of those guys are pinned their ears back, gamble, run for it, maybe even figure out my gap assignment later if I figure it out at all. When you've got a guy like Donald, and let's say Sue gets this kind of freedom as well, I don't think he will in his new position, but when you have a guy that doesn't necessarily follow the textbook rule of the gap assignments, you need a slower playing linebacker behind him, because that guy has to read what happens in front of him and then act accordingly. The example I was given is Brian Cushing. Stylistically, he's fit well behind J.J. Watt before, because Watt has always had the freedom to go do what he wants, because he can do things that truly nobody else can. Well, you got to have a slower, more patient linebacker. Cushing for the longest time was that. Then he got old and he became too patient by accident. But you've got to have those kind of guys behind him to make it work. And the Rams are very, now that they've traded Ogletree, who probably wasn't quite that kind of guy anyway, but they're thin at linebacker. They don't have experienced guys. So imagine playing in the NFL for the first time. It's already a faster game. And yes, you're playing behind one of the really great players probably of all time in Aaron Donald, but you're going to be seeing things that you've never seen before and having to react because of the nature of his style of play. I think it's a tall order for whoever winds up being next to Mark Barron for the Rams at linebacker.
Yeah, and you know, that's a very mild criticism we've had of Aaron Donald the last couple of years we've done the show, is that I'll dumb it down by saying he's a risk taker sometimes, an unnecessary risk taker. He does go under blocks. Does a disciplined Sue help make that right? Is that basically what they need out of Sue in this defense?
Yes, I would say yes. It's probably fine if you have one super athlete playing outside the blocking or the gap schemes. Michael Bennett in Seattle also did that. He was deliberately given that kind of freedom. But look who was playing behind him and those linebackers in Seattle. So as long as you're surrounded by discipline, if you're an exceptional talent, you can probably be undisciplined. Now, what a coach would ultimately love is for you to still make the plays and be disciplined, but coaches will never coach against your instinct, not the good ones anyway. So when you do something wrong, the other day I was watching film and we saw A'shaun Robinson on film make what was one of the worst looking plays we've seen in terms of technique. He went after the wrong, he's supposed to take the guard, he goes after the right tackle, so he's going the opposite way of the play. His footwork was horrible, and he wound up making the tackle from the backside for a 1 yard loss. It's a tackle for loss on a horrendously executed play. And I always ask coaches, what do you say to that? What do you tell them in the meetings then? And the answer is you tell them, good play. Hey, here's how we teach it. Here's how we'd like it to go. Here's where you're going to get more consistency is if you did it that way. But we're never going to discredit a guy for production points. So you don't want to take this stuff out of these guys. It's hard, though, because if A'shaun Robinson got gashed on that play, I asked a coach, so let's say it happens 4 times in a game, he makes the play 3 times, and you guys get a 40-yard run against you on the 4th time, then what do you say to him in practice? And that's where it gets hard. That might get into individual personalities and what does each guy need to hear and how do you need to coach them. That's the hard part of football, is the human side of it. These guys can't do it perfect every time, and some of them are so good they don't want to do it perfect, but you've got to find the happy medium there. Did I dance around that question well enough? I don't even remember what you asked. I feel like I've said nothing, though.
You dance beautifully right there.
Thank you.
Something out of a, I don't know, Usher, is he still going? He's a good dancer.
He is. I Googled him the other day just to see how old he was. He's in his 40s now, but he's a young 40s. Yeah.
Yeah. He's one of those dudes who always just looks super young. I know nothing about Usher. I know the general gist of Usher and what he does for employment, and that's about it. So we talked about some of the superstar tandems here. Let's talk about the Patriots, who have obviously built their thing a little bit differently. And we say all the time, Patriots are a bend don't break defense. They're going to give up their yards, but you know they're going to tighten up in the red zone. The way they're built from a roster standpoint, their strength is up the middle, and that's especially true with the defensive line. They get these big guys. It's Malcolm Brown is one of them, and we'll get to Malcolm Brown in a second because there's an interesting conundrum with him. But the Patriots have basically said we're stopping the run. Seemingly said we're stopping the run first in a league where no one really cares about the run as much anymore.
Because if you stop the run, then you get into passing situations, and that's the only time that you can truly fully dictate the game up front. You become the aggressor on third down and long defensively. You line up and you just determine the matchups. Think about those diamond fronts we've talked about mm-hmm. that everybody's doing now, what the Texans do, where it's Whitney Merciless standing directly over the center, and then there's a guy, two guys on each side of him, which makes five D linemen, five front players against five blockers, and you get to choose who has to block who by who you line up where on defense. You don't get into that stuff unless it's an obvious passing situation. So the teams that believe in stopping the run, they do that because their logic is if we can do that seven or eight times a game, that's seven or more eight passing situations we create. Because when you get to second down and eight or more, 80% of the time, the opposing team throws the ball. Second and long is basically, it's almost an obvious passing situation anymore. And we're starting to see defenses gradually, they're playing to that a little bit more. So that's the logic behind, that's the thinking. It's just we want to create the obvious passing situations, and then we can win with our scheme from there. We can design our blitzes. We can give you different disguises, zone rotations. We become the aggressor defensively in those scenarios.
Well, let's that kind of transitions into what I want to talk about next. There's so much talent at this position in the NFL. I think this is you could go through and probably peg like 15 to 20 guys who are legitimate all-pro contenders at the position. Because of that, because it's so oversaturated, it seems like these guys are naturally cheaper. So in New England, you have a guy like Malcolm Brown. They didn't exercise his fifth round option, which I think was pretty eye opening to a lot of us. Maybe there's something going on behind the scenes, but maybe the Patriots are just looking at it and saying we can get someone good and cheap to plug up there. And on top of that, you got next year you're gonna have some absolute stars coming out at the position in the draft, whether it be Ed Oliver down in Houston, Rashawn Gary at Michigan, the Alabama guy whose name is escaping me at the moment, Raekwon Davis down at Alabama. So yeah. You got a bunch of guys who could go top 10 to further solidify this as the deepest position in the league. But and then on top of that, poor Jonathan Hankins once again can't get signed. We're taking up a collection for him, but it's so deep. Is a team like the Patriots kind of saying, we'll put our strength there. Well, not only put our strength there, but we don't even have to spend that much cap space in order to build our strength there.
I would love to have an honest conversation about that with Bill Belichick, because I bet there's an answer for it because of everything you're just saying. But what's also interesting is New England, if you look at their history, they don't pay their edge players very much either. They'll let Chandler Jones and those guys walk away because those edge guys are very expensive. And so they've tend in New England to concentrate their investments inside or on guys that gobble up blockers. Let's just think of it this way, because the guy they signed this year is Adrian Claiborne, who I've always liked within the context of a certain scheme. Claiborne, to me, even though I know he went off against Dallas's backup tackles and had six sacks in that game, the real Claiborne's the guy that had two sacks in all the other games.
Yeah.
And he's a good run defender, and he's not a pass rusher necessarily. What he does well is what you teach, and this is kind of gets into what people – it's not two gapping. People think of two gapping as give me a big body and let him just stand there and fill both gaps. That's not how it goes. There's nobody that's big. You need a 700-pound man to do that. That doesn't exist. Really, when you get into some of the two gapping type of stuff, and even this has one gap principles anymore, It's, hey, instead of penetrating through the gap, you're going to go attack the blocker who's assigned to you. And in doing so, you might get penetration. You're going to clog that blocker and force him to stay with you and not get up to our linebackers. And in clogging him, you're going to put your body in the gap that you have, and you're going to put his body in another gap. And now we're clogging two gaps. That's kind of the big 30,000-foot look at that thing. Well, to be able to do that, that doesn't take a wide range of athletic prowess. You need to have strength, and you need to have technique. Initial quickness always mm-hmm. helps, but it's not as vital as it is if you're trying to get up the field past a blocker. So it's a more limited array of skills that are demanded on those guys, and maybe that's why New England feels those guys are replaceable, because you can find limited athletes better than you can find unlimited athletes. The gap penetrators, the Ndamukong Suhs, the Aaron Donalds of the world, those are super athletes, and those are harder to find, and they're more expensive, all that stuff. If you're just wanting to be fundamentally sound along your defensive line, then you need to find the right kind of body, and the guy that has technique's a big deal with it. So a guy that has some football IQ.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, and that kind of goes back to the early Belichick Patriots years, the old, the Brewski, Teddy Johnson defenses and all that, where they were big and they were old and they were smart. And that's kind of how they built that defense, so they could do a variety of things there. But
which would you, if you were building your what's your Hartford team that you like to call them? What's the name of your team?
I don't know if I have a nickname for
your them, Hartford expansion team. You don't remember what you call it? You talked about it all the time for like.
No, I think it's just unnamed Hartford expansion team right now, which I might stick with as the actual team name too.
Well, that's going to be difficult to get off the ground marketing-wise then. But if you had that kind, if you had your Hartford team and you got to start and build your scheme, which way are you going?
I know. I think I'm that's a good question. Do you just throw everything into the offensive side of the ball at this point?
Well, Philadelphia just won the Super Bowl having the best D-line in football.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they also
the offensive side of the ball. I know they won with offense in the playoffs at times, but that's just how it ended. They would not have been in the Super Bowl without that D line.
Well, they obviously, I mean, they got the, you know, they got the cheap franchise quarterback bonus there, so they had a little more flexibility. I don't want to overstate that.
What, you got an expansion team? You can.
I have an expansion team. I do.
Minnesota and Jacksonville had two of the other great defensive lines last year, and they ended in the Final Four.
Yeah.
It's a defensive league now, Gary. You got to stick with the times.
I know. It's. I don't know. I mean, don't you? I think I'm just going to get the next Tom Brady and then go cheap on defense. How's that for an answer?
That's a horrible answer.
It's a great question. I hate the thought of paying the edge guys what you have to pay the edge guys. I'll say that. I think I'd almost rather, you know, the cover guys aren't cheap either, but I think I'd almost rather build up the middle where you get so much value. You get so much bang for your buck at safety and at, you know,
well, all right, but hold on. Let's say you have to just build the D-line first. Let's say you can't. We're only talking D-line since, you know, this is the D-line show. Let's say you just build the defensive line and you can pick. Do we want to be the Patriots stylistically and we know what that costs? Or mm-hmm. do we want to be the Eagles, who are the ultimate, under Jim Schwartz, that's the ultimate one-gap penetrating scheme in all senses. Everybody just get the hell up the field. That's how they play it. Which approach would you want to take, knowing who you have to get and what it's going to cost and what the implications can be?
I'm going to pick the Patriots, and I'll justify it this way. I think if you're going to do if you're going to say we got to get up the field, I think you need pure athletes to do that, and I think those are the guys who are especially expensive. Because I think even when you have pure athletes who are a little bit underachieving on their rookie contract, they still get paid the next time around.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course, you're gonna have. Yeah, you have to pay these guys at some point. And if you look at the Eagles roster too, Derek Barnett, first round pick, Fletcher Cox, first round pick, Brandon Graham back in 2010 was a first rounder, Chris Long, their backup now is a number two overall pick, wasn't he? Tim Jernigan was a high second round pick, Haloti Ngata, who really is more of a Patriots style player, but he was a first round pick. So, yeah, it's a high pedigree defensive line, and it has worked out. But if you miss on one of those guys, and they did miss once, Marcus Smith they missed with. Mm-hmm. If you miss, that's a big miss. So I'm with you. I'd probably go the Patriots way as well and find more replaceable guys. And this isn't to say the Patriots don't try to penetrate at times. We're talking interior defensive line. So you'll still take the edge rusher at times, but you're not doing one gap stuff every single snap like some teams.
Yeah, and the Patriots have tried to pluck those edge rushers in the middle rounds of the draft and gotten them that way, but we'll see. Like, Derek Rivers is hurt last year. We'll see what he is if he's healthy. They were kind of excited about him, but we'll go 5-11 every year in Hartford, and I'll be the owner/GM, so it'll just always be that way. Until
well,
I
just
die.
Have some personal seat licenses and you'll be fine still.
There you go. All right, Andy, before we move on here, you know, hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy and you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/things. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As the applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. With results like that, it's no wonder ZipRecruiter is the highest rated hiring site in America. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/things. That's ZipRecruiter.com/THINGS. ZipRecruiter.com/things. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, well, let's unveil the top 10 defensive linemen in the NFL. Again, if you listened to the show in the past, I think the only thing that might shock you at this point is Jadeveon Clowney is not part of this vote. So he was on the Edge show, which was a couple of weeks ago. You can check it out if you want to hear us say Jadeveon Clowney multiple times. The way we do this, AP poll style, we have a twist this week. There is no third voter. It was just me and Andy. I don't know what happened. Voter suppression going on here on the 10 Things podcast. So we have the top 10. Andy's vote still counted as double, which means he wields even more power this week. We'll unveil the top 10, but first we will do the others receiving votes. And this is AP poll style, by the way. So first place vote, 15 points. Last place vote, 1 point. That would be 15th, would be last. I didn't explain it very well this week. I'm still just shocked that we only have the two voters. Others receiving votes here, we're starting with Gerald McCoy. I mean, look how deep this is. Gerald McCoy didn't even make the top 10. Gerald McCoy, Trey Flowers, Brandon Williams, DeForest Buckner, Michael Bennett, Jarrell Casey, Linval Joseph, Chris Jones, Grady Jarrett. The one guy I want to hear you talk about, Andy, is DeForest Buckner, who I thought I gave him a little bit of a higher vote because I wanted him to make the list, and I know he was just out in San Francisco.
And I didn't vote for
him.
He did. And I bought, and this is why we have a third voter to offset this kind of stuff. I guess I'll just own it and say I probably forgot him, which is terrible because I just went to San Francisco to write a big article. I know. And the article said he's a dark horse defensive player of the year candidate, and that was not clickbait. I think he is. So DeForest Buckner should be on this list. And if he's not right now, and there's an argument, hey, he doesn't, if just based on his body of work right now, given the depth of this position, you could argue he's not a top 10 defensive lineman yet. He's going to be. He is long. He is big. He's athletic. He's always been a two-gap guy. He would have played in the, again, I'm reluctant because the Patriots aren't just a two-gap scheme, but he would have been a blocking clogger type. Mm-hmm. Then Robert Saleh, their D coordinator, who'd come from Pete Carroll in Seattle, and he came over from Jacksonville, another Seahawks-style defense, he installed that in San Francisco. The first thing they did when they got there, They believe that the three technique is the most important position in that scheme up front. It's not the Leo, which everybody loves to say because they like to say Leo, and it makes them feel smart to call the position something new. It's not that. It's the three. It's just the three technique. That's what they like, not that Leo defensive end. And they said, who's our best guy? Because they had Buckner and Armstead there, similar long body type of guys built for what we think of as two gap schemes. And then they probably knew they were drafting Solomon Thomas as well because they had the number two pick at the time. They wound up getting Thomas at number three. Anyway, Buckner was the guy they identified as the three tech. And my sense talking to Sala was it really wasn't a difficult decision. He's the monster up front. And he played very well. His numbers, his sack numbers were low. His disruptiveness numbers, though, were extremely high. I love the. I think he's Calais Campbell 2.0, and that's what everybody's. He said he's heard that name a million times. I think for good reason. I love DeForest Buckner, and by the way, he's a very nice. It's weird because he's an enormous. This makes me feel weirdly old, Gary. Tell me if you've had this because you meet with these athletes too. Mm-hmm. He's 6'8", 300-something pounds, and I would be convinced that just one of his arms weighs more than my whole body. He is a large man, and he's young. He has a young demeanor almost, and it makes me feel strangely old to have this giant guy who's so clearly younger than me sitting across. And I'm not sure if I'm supposed to feel big and mature around him or tiny and little, but like my physical stature says I should.
I used to do the NBA a lot, so I used to feel like a, no matter what age they were and whether they acted young, or I just always felt like a small child. I found it very I found it slightly humiliating to be hanging around NBA athletes all the time who are just they are just really large human beings, and they make you feel very tiny. Not psychologically, like they're not doing anything mean to you. They're too big for me.
No, it's you're doing something mean to you psychologically. Is how you view yourself. I can't tell you how many times I've wandered back to a Hilton Garden Inn or walked into the little crummy weight room that these 3-star chain hotels have, and you've just met with these athletes, and you think, what's the point? What's the point? You just wander back out of the weight room, accept who you are, which is the little pudge in the middle, skinny in the arms, but hey, I can sit at a keyboard and I can control a lot of things. I mean, it's weird where we find power and where we feel dispowered. Or it's not weird at all. Two years ago at the Super Bowl in Indianapolis, I got in my mind, I'm going to go work out. I was all gung-ho to do it. And there were three treadmills, and on the right, there was one open treadmill in the middle, and then in the rest of the weight room on the right-hand treadmill was Solomon Wilcots, who still looks like he could play, and on the left was Tim Ryan, who also still looks like he could play. They were both announcers at the time, of course, and I had to either, it was my decision, I had to go up and run in the treadmill between these two guys. And I couldn't bring myself to. I was all dressed to work out, and they couldn't see me. Their backs were to the front door, so they didn't see me cower away. I turned around and just walked away. I wasn't going to run on the treadmill between those two guys.
That was before you caught a pass against Chris Harris. After that, you puffed out your chest, shoved both of them off of their respective treadmills, and went and got going. All right, top 10 here. We're going to have – obviously, we'll have some repeats with the guys we talked about at the top of the show here. But number 10, that is Ndamukong Suh. Number 9, Kawan Short. Number 8, Mike Daniels. Number 7, Geno Atkins. Obviously, we just talked about Suh quite a bit right there. Geno Atkins was kind of like the original Aaron Donald, just from a body type standpoint. He was the guy who, you know, he fell into the middle rounds because he was too short. And he was the guy who kind of ushered in. I feel like he made it acceptable to sort of go with these undersized defensive tackles, many of whom have become stars.
For coaches are always tell every single coach that's ever taught along the trenches, offense or defense, they always say low man wins. Whoever gets lower, you're going to win the battle against that guy. Well, what took him so long to realize that the 6-foot tall guy is going to be lower than the 6-foot four guy? And the 6-foot tall guy, when he's stocky and strong and quick like Atkins is, he's going to be low and explosive. Yeah, great for you. And what's odd, though, is that we just got done trumpeting DeForest Buckner and how long and tall he is, and that's why he's great. And now we're saying Geno Atkins is short and stubby, and that's why he's great. And they're both true. They have advantages and disadvantages. But Geno Atkins has the best bull rush of anybody in the NFL, and it's not because he's stronger than everyone. He's stronger than some. It's because he's naturally a low player. Now, there's some things he doesn't do that Buckner can do, but that bull rush alone puts him in the top 10.
Yeah. Number six, this is Cameron Hayward. Number five, Akeem Hicks. Number four, J.J. Watt. Obviously a big question mark. We'll talk about him in the lightning-ish round, actually. And number three is Calais Campbell here. Yeah, I mean, Hicks is – I feel like Hicks is your favorite player in the NFL, Andy, if we gave you the truth serum.
I agree with you. He is. I loved Akeem. He showed up every single week on film in Chicago. And what they do, they play 3-4 structures, but their defensive ends, because of that, they're actually one of the teams that they does employ a lot of true 3-4 concepts. That's still not their foundation because everybody's foundation is nickel. But he's a grown man strength. He wins just by out-stronging, man, out-working him. Dominating human beings. Akeem Hicks shows up every single week on film. He's gotten better every year in his career, and he got better after they paid him big money last season too.
Number two, Fletcher Cox. Number one, not surprisingly, is Aaron Donald. Fletcher Cox is another one of those guys. Just he's just a supersized human being. I mean, he's a dude who's like proportioned like he would be if he was like 5'11 and like an in shape 200-pound guy. Instead, he's what is he, like 6'5 and then 3'10, something like that.
Yeah, he moves like that too, and he's kind of balding. So when you see him in the locker room changing, because his body's not overwhelmingly impressive, and then he's kind of balding, and you think, man, he looks like a really good YMCA noon ball player, and then you put on the film, of course, and he's a really good NFL player. I had him first team All-Pro a year ago. I was the one guy that didn't vote Donald first team, and that's not because I don't think Donald is deserving, but I thought Cox, Eagles had one of the probably the best run defense in football last year, and Cox was the main reason why. The Rams had the number 30 run defense in football. Donald was not the main reason why, but the best defense, best run defense in football, that should mean something to the best player on that defensive line, especially when that D-line is built to go rush the quarterback. You stop the run again and again. You get in all these pass-rushing situations. That's how Philly won the Super Bowl, and Fletcher Cox was the featured guy in that equation.
Well, the other thing with Aaron Donald, just to also defend Andy here, Aaron Donald basically missed 2.5 games, which is, I think that's a legitimate
justification. Yeah, one was a garbage
saying,
game. One was yes. The last one was a garbage game, though. So
week 17,
he missed
but
week
he
one.
Didn't play. He missed week one, and he kind of played a part-time role that first game
in
he
week
was back.
Two.
But
yeah.
I don't think it's crazy to say, Aaron Donald was not first team, but.
I think right, what, and he ran away, he got defensive. You know what happened? And I'm going to be honest. I love Wade Phillips. I love that Rams staff. And I liked Aaron Donald. We had a great time watching film together a few years ago. I don't want to say anything critical about these guys, but when Wade Phillips last year came out and said in December, hey, how about Aaron Donald for MVP, not defensive player of the year, but for MVP, that planted a very active seed in a lot of voters' heads. And I feel like he kind of got some MVP vote or some defensive player of the year votes just by default, because Wade Phillips is so highly regarded. Yeah. And his words matter. He didn't go out and say Robert Quinn MVP. He's not saying it about everybody, but I just thought that accelerated Aaron Donald down the path, which is good. That's the greatest coach would do that. You wonder how the front office feels about it when they're the ones having to pay Donald now. But, I didn't love the reaction to that. That just because Wade Phillips says he's MVP, well, that must mean he's the best defensive player of the year. And I think that's how it went with some people.
You don't have to do everything Wade Phillips tells you to do. I think that's the moral of the story here. All right, let's get to the lightning-ish round. Couple of true or false to start this one off, Andy. Going into 2018, Aaron Donald is your favorite to win defensive player of the year.
Depends what Wade Phillips says.
I'll throw this out as a little factoid. I did not see Defensive Player of the Year odds yet, but I did look at the MVP odds. One defensive player was listed on there. That'd be J.J. Watt.
Well, because
we're
going to
have a J.J. Watt question in a second.
Voting tendency. It's hard to win back-to-back Defensive Player of the Year because voters want to feel smart and like they're being creative and that they're thinking about this stuff. We all do it. And so you think, well, who else can it be? J.J. Watt won it a few times in a row. I think it's 3 out of 4 years. But let's remember, those 4 years he had were probably the best four-year stretch of anybody to ever play football.
Well, answer the question, Andy. Is Aaron Donald your favorite? Let's rephrase the question. Aaron Donald is your preseason pick to win Defensive Player of the Year in 2018.
No,
in
he's
light
not.
Of now, Sue coming in and all that.
No, I think the Rams are going to be a very up and down defense this year. They have a lot of strengths, but they have a lot of weaknesses too. My favorite to win it would probably be Kuechly. Kind of feels like my default safety option on all that. And he plays an easy position to analyze.
Yes,
Jalen. How about Jalen Ramsey? Kuechly. You were. What about Ramsey in Jacksonville?
Good. I think that's more dark horse, but if you want to stick with that, that's fine. The thing I don't like doing, and people get involved in this all the time, I don't want to make it Aaron Donald versus the field, because obviously you take the field in that case. Like I have this argument all the time when I have to do my fantasy football stuff and talk about that publicly, and people say, well, the number one last year is almost never the number one the next year. And it's like, well, yeah, there's like 1,000 other players in the league. So, of course, if you take the number one versus the field is more likely to do that. But if you're just saying the number one versus this specific player or this specific player, then it's a different conversation. But anyways, I'm picking Kuechly. You're picking Jalen Ramsey. True or false, J.J. Watt wins at least one more Defensive Player of the Year award in his career.
If I'm a betting man, I'm saying false. Back injury and then major knee injury. But I would hope it's true because I want to be able to say that. I'd love when we can say unequivocally so-and-so is the best who ever did it. And I feel that way about Tom Brady. I'd like to feel that way and say it about J.J. Watt. And I'd probably be comfortable saying it now. But I don't know how comfortable I'd be saying it 10 years from now if his career winds up being a little bit short. So I'm hoping he does, but I wouldn't bet on it. What about you?
I will say yes, because I think if he has even a B-plus year, he's going to be a candidate. I think if J.J. Watt, I think if it was the same field as last year, and I think if J.J. Watt had a, maybe not vintage J.J. Watt, but near that, I think that would be enough momentum to get him one more. Mm-hmm. So I'll say yes. I'll just be positive, too. Best non-Sue free agent addition, keeping contract in mind, Lotulelei to the Bills on a more lucrative long-term deal, or Sheldon Richardson to the Vikings on his one-year deal?
I think Lotulelei means more for the Bills, but Richardson has a better chance to shine and make impact plays with the Vikings. So I was inclined to say Richardson. And then when you added the contract, keep that in mind, I say Richardson quite comfortably.
Yeah, I say Richardson as well. I love that one-year deal in Minnesota. Better bounce-back candidate with a new team, Muhammad Wilkerson or Dontari Poe?
Wilkerson. He's playing for Mike Pettine again, who he thrived under. Green Bay, they'll let him be destructive. He won't have to be quite as disciplined. Pettine's another guy. We said, well, are you a one-gap penetrator? Are you a two-gap clogger? Do you take on blockers rather than get by him? What do you do? Pettine's whole approach to blockers is just go kick that blocker's ass. We'll figure it out as we go. I mean, in the simplest, crudest terms. And I think that works for a guy like Wilkerson, who is as talented and physically imposing as anyone we've talked about on the show so far.
I agree. And I should have mentioned Wilkerson in Green Bay. Poe is in Carolina now, if you're scoring at home. Well, that's a wrap for this show. Thanks, as always, to producer Shelby Royston, all the guys at Cadence 13 who make us sound so good every week. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. You really are the best. This thing's winding down. Position Ranking Series is winding down. We're going to have a big mailbag show when it's over. Send those questions. We're on Twitter, Andy_Benoit, ggramling_si. You can email us, talkback@themmqb.com. Just make sure you put podcast in the subject line helps us find it. Or we're both on Facebook. You can send us stuff on Facebook. You just have to spell our names correctly and find us. Even if you don't have a question, if you have thoughts on the show, we do love hearing from you. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer and this show, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.